Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante with a very special guest filling in for Andy Shea. Big shoes to fill. Who else would you want to have do it than Chris Buchanani? Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you coming on. And for our listeners on 98.7 The Fox, this is back-to-back Chris Buchanani. How about that, Chris?
Well, folks,
there's no such thing as too much Chris.
My wife would probably disagree, but let's keep moving.
We're not asking her, though, Chris. We're not asking her. All right, let's move on. I'm glad to have you on the show because I want to talk about something that I think you are the guy to talk about with this topic. We hit on it a little bit earlier this week. Last Friday it was, the president had a roundtable, calling it the Saving College Sports Roundtable. And where he gathered, a group of about 20 folks or so from various areas in sports. Everyone but actual college athletes were in that room. My first question to you is, should the federal government even be involved in this conversation?
I'll say this. I think it's reasonable that they are involved, and some people might feel differently. And this topic, as you know, Jim, gets incredibly complex, incredibly quickly. And it's this unstoppable force versus immovable object situation where fans are so frustrated with the current state of college football. Many people point to certain things or a collection of things that they don't like, and that frustrates them. Others can't pinpoint any one thing with which they find displeasure, but the uncertainty and the instability is just driving them nuts. So they want to know, why is this happening? What is the source of this feeling, this dissatisfaction I have with one of my favorite things in the world, college football, and how can it get fixed? And the desire to get those answers is the unstoppable force. Well, the immovable object is how boring and complicated the answers are, right? So we're going to endeavor in this hour to pick through all of these topics. But man, as soon as you start diving in, it gets into all kinds of things that have nothing to do with the sport of football or the pageantry and tradition of college football, and gets into stuff like antitrust exemptions and labor law and a bunch of stuff that is already making people's eyes gloss over. But it is indeed the purview of government. And one thing that I have pointed out to folks, and I understand that whenever you bring Trump into the equation, immediately the hyper-partisan tribal nature of our times kicks in. So please, just for your own benefit, as well as everyone else is involved in this program, do the Joe Paterno blue lines thing. Set that aside for a moment and just understand that there is a history of government involvement with college football. If you run down a roster of the most storied and successful and prominent college football programs, most of them are public institutions, or at least in Penn State's case, the unique public related institution category we have created to facilitate more tomfoolery here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And there's even a historical precedent for the office of the presidency directly intervening in the national institution of college football. You saw it in the early 1900s when Teddy Roosevelt directly stepped in at a time when the sport was in crisis. In that time, they were dealing with some of the same issues we have today. Athletes jumping from school to school, questions about players getting paid, but it was player safety and serious injury, and in some cases even death, that was driving TR's involvement. But there's precedent for all of this. So whether you like the people who are doing it, whether you like the approach that they're taking for it, that's a different conversation. there is a role. I think there's clearly a role. And one path, I don't think it's a likely path, but one possible solution to what I think most people, at least in their gut, are feeling as the problems, maybe even the crisis level problems facing college football, comes through congressional legislation. So yes, yes, it's an appropriate place to be having the conversation, and it should at the bare minimum be taking place on some level.
Chris, you saw how excited I got when you brought up Teddy Roosevelt.
Yep.
I thought I was the only one who would relate that. I actually mentioned that earlier this week. Two real quick notes on that, his involvement.
Yep.
One of them was that because of safety issues, okay, think about this, because of safety issues in the sport, people were dying playing the sport, true deaths, mm-hmm. and as opposed to untrue deaths, but it's not an exaggeration. People were dying playing the sport. Some schools, they were switching to a much safer sport, rugby.
Right. Well, you can get pretty messed up playing rugby, but there weren't guys dying on the rugby pitch. Now, just as a point of historical clarification, the public perception at the time of the number of deaths that were occurring in the sport of football, which at that point was still evolving, and really it only in some ways resembled the modern game that we know today, but the perception of the number of deaths that occurred resulting from football versus the true number of deaths was skewed. Okay. There was a perception that there were more people dying than actually died, but there is also no question that the way football was being played at that time was exceptionally dangerous. And even in the cases where players weren't dying, they were sustaining serious career ending injuries that impacted the rest of their lives. So there were legitimate safety concerns that had to be addressed.
Exactly. And the other little tidbit is that for safety reasons, that's what caused the forward pass to become part of the game.
Sure.
And if I could digress a bit, one of my favorite stories, and I'll tie this in. If you recall, Notre Dame was credited with really advancing the forward pass as part of the game, with Newt Rockne, famous coach, was actually the quarterback at the time. One of my good friends many years ago, when we were younger, he had his first child, and he named his son Gus, of all things. And we're all like, Gus, where'd that name come from? It was his, I think, great-grandfather was named Gus. He was the wide receiver, favorite wide receiver of Newt Rockne on that Notre Dame team. So that's you mentioned Teddy Roosevelt, an opportunity to throw that story in. I will take advantage of that opportunity. All right, let's get back to where we were headed, though, with this meeting. And, Chris, you brought up the fact that it's a little bit nuanced here. My question for all of this is, there were people there standing up speaking about the solutions. I didn't hear anyone really stand up and define what the problems actually were.
I agree. That's a fair criticism. And I think it would have been more useful if that group would not have entered the room assuming everyone understood the problems, because probably some folks walked in there not really clearly defining them and not having an understanding of that in their minds, and they left without it. So again, the whole thing to me, just as somebody who's followed this for a long time and cares about it quite a bit, felt like mostly a dog and pony show. I don't think a lot useful is going to come out of this. But to your point, I said earlier, a lot of fans just kind of feel this in their gut. They feel that something's not right. There's no doubt when you just look at the amount of money flying around, it feels like an unsustainable long-term approach with NIL. There are a lot of people, myself included, who absolutely hate the transfer portal and the way you see players in football, but especially in men's basketball, just hopping from team to team to team to team. And it's eroding the investment they feel in the games. And it's weakening the attachment they have to the program in many cases. So they feel like there's something wrong with that. Overall, we are consumers at the end of the day, and we feel like we're being charged more and more for a product quality that is decreasing. And yet, there are folks who have fashioned themselves as advocates for the players who view those as the features, not the bugs in the system. And so I think you do need to map out that one man's problem is, in fact, another man's improvement in the system. And then lost in all of this, from my perspective, is that most players in the revenue sports, football and men's basketball, are A, not going to go on to play that sport professionally, and B, not making life-changing generational money as a result of their NIL deals, the majority of them. They're making good money. They're making money, Jim, that you and I would be happy to have today in our lives, but not money that's going to set them up for the rest of their existence. And the fact that they are in pursuit of playing time and money, putting the football before the college in college football and hopping from school to school to school and ending up at the end of the deal without a chance to play football professionally and without enough money in their bank account to set them up for life, and probably having over the course of that journey completely compromised any value they could have gotten out of their free college education, that's a problem that I hear almost no one talking about. But my prediction is that, you know, 5 to 7 years from now, we're going to start reading the exposés reported by ESPN, in many cases by the same people who are cheering this on right now, about how so many former players are in such a bad situation because their money's gone and they were not set up to go out into the world and have an actual career. And made all the more difficult by the fact that they were at one point making 50 grand a month, and then they graduate from college, they're used up in terms of their usefulness to college football programs, and now they got to go out and they're not qualified to do jobs that pay 50 grand a year. That's a big culture shock to a 21 or a 22-year-old who's been pampered all their life.
It really is. And I think where the conflict is, Chris, and we'll talk about this after the break, is you're asking you're trying to protect these players from themselves. And our court system is not designed to rule that way. And I know that's a little bit vague how I put it. Don't have enough time, but right after this break, Chris, I'm going to attempt to explain what I mean by that.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two of our show. I'm Jim Galante. Sitting in for Andrew P. Shea is Chris Buchanani. Thanks so much, Chris, for doing that. And we're talking about the Saving College Sports Roundtable that took place last Friday. The president and a group of very smart people, very experienced people, got together, and Chris, you and I are going to come up with better solutions than they did, that group did. That's my take on it. But I think we're trying to find the core of some of the issues, and one of them is this. I find myself talking to fans who say things like, oh, the transfer portal, they should only be allowed one free transfer. Oh, they're, you know, the big stars, the big sports are making millions of dollars. That's not right. There should be a restriction on that. The problem with those statements is that it eventually reaches the court system, and You shouldn't, the court systems are going to say, you can't restrict how much a person makes. As far as the transfers go, hey, everyone in the public, if you or I, Chris, wanted to transfer schools five or six times, it may not have been a smart thing for us to do, but we had the freedom to do that. No one was protecting us from ourselves. And I feel that's the problem here. People are saying, well, why don't they just do this? And you can't just do that because the court systems will tell you you can't do that.
Right. And what they fail to appreciate is that what they see as a comparable situation in the NFL is not, in fact, comparable because, first of all, NFL players are employees of the organizations for which they play. And the NFL has an institutionalized antitrust exemption, just like Major League Baseball. And so getting back to how does Congress get involved? You know, and just as an aside, real quickly, like you're right, Jim, like you have the right to make as much money as you want. You have the right to hop from one employer to the next if you so choose. You know what you don't have a right to? You don't have a right to a free college education. So let's keep in mind that there's like indeed an exchange of services and goods here, and you can talk all you want about balancing out fairness. And I do think the revenue side got so lopsided when it came to the conferences and the colleges that direct financial benefit did need to flow back to the players. But this is not good guys versus bad guys, where it's all black and white. But to go back to the point about congressional involvement, the solution that gets the government involved is that the big schools that are the engine driving big-time college football, they go to Congress and they say, it is in the national interest that this very American institution, which benefits a lot of citizens and is enjoyed by hundreds of millions more, needs the flexibility in order to operate in a framework that, while it is still fair to the participants, brushes up against the borders and the guardrails that we have for the private sector workplace. And so we need you to pass legislation that basically gives us our own unique sandbox to play in. And ultimately that involves like what you would call an antitrust exemption. Now, I'm not an attorney, so I'm probably playing a little fast and loose with the terminology here. But for a general understanding, that's what the NCAA, that's what the conferences are asking for from Congress. And then once you have that, you are free to carve out a unique definition for what it is to be a student athlete. And it means you are somewhere in between what it looked like back when Goon and Noble were playing for Joe Paterno in the 90s and really everyone in the modern era of college football had up until 2019, and just being an employee who works for a boss. It would be its own unique category in between there, and it would be created in a post-legislative solution world. But the problem is Congress can't even pass the federal budget on time. They can't agree on anything. They can't agree on important stuff like infrastructure and warfare. And we think they're going to solve college football. That's why I have absolutely no optimism for that solution. Even though, if I'm being honest, I think that would certainly be the best approach for fans. No one ever asks a question of like, well, how does this affect the fans? Even though it's our eyeballs and our precious time and our precious entertainment dollars, disposable income, driving the value here. Nobody cares what we think. Nobody cares how much we enjoy the product, and they won't, frankly, until the bottom line starts shrinking. And by then it'll be too late. But I think the congressional approach probably would be the best solution for fans to be able to enjoy college football the most. And I think sneakily, it would be far more favorable to the players over the long term than a lot of people suspect. But the reality is the people who have put themselves forward as the spokespeople for the interests of the players are grifters and lawyers who stand to make the most money if chaos reigns. And ultimately this turns into what we have right now, just like a Wild West free agent market where there are a lot of people, to be taken advantage of for a lot of money. So anyway, sorry, I get fired up about this topic.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you about it, because I knew you would have very strong feelings about it. And I
Jay Billis, by the way, has positioned himself as the national voice on behalf of the players. And Jay Billis is an incredibly smart dude with a degree from Duke University, and he is also a complete idiot on the way he has framed this. When it comes to the core outcomes, Jay Billis and I are probably actually pretty well aligned, and he is such a poor spokesperson for them. I wish he'd just shut up, because I think he does more damage than he does good.
Well, the problem I see is that all the people who want to say they represent the best interests of the sport, they do not. And it was evident in this roundtable. They had several people speak, and you could pick out the names and know that they have a biased opinion. The commissioners of the Southeast Conference in the Big Ten have a very different motivation than the commissioner of the ACC in the Big 12.
Yeah. And again, but we're talking about best results for everyone, players and fans. The ambitions of the Big Ten and the SEC, I think, need to be constrained and, frankly, brought closer to the reality experienced by the Big 12 and the ACC, because I think for college football to exist in its most valuable form, which is as something distinct from the NFL and something like what you and I grew up and fell in love with as fans, the naked ambition of Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey in the Big Ten and SEC respectively need to be put in check, because it is better for the sport to have more institutions involved, to have regionality, to have rivalries, and not evolve into a low rent version of the NFL.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the NFL. One of the big debates going on right now, Chris, is to get that antitrust exemption, like the NFL. The NFL, despite the fact that they're on about 53 different networks, they negotiate as one. In college football, you're negotiating as different conferences.
Absolutely. It would be like if the NFC East and the AFC South were negotiating against one another and looking out for their respective interests.
Exactly. So one of the greatest, the biggest advocates for this, the biggest spokesman, is a guy by the name of billionaire Cody Campbell.
Yeah.
I think billionaire is part of his name.
That's his first name, correct. Cody's yes. His middle name.
And he's on the board at Texas Tech. It's fascinating, is it not, that a guy arguing for this represents a school that's part of the Big 12? Not
right.
Part of the Big Ten or Southeast right. Conference. I suspect if you'd hear, well, not suspect, because it's a fact, Tony Petitti, Greg Sankey, commissioners, they both say, you know what? No, that would cost us money. You make more money by negotiating as a conference than you would do overall. Wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have not dug into the economics enough to say authoritatively, I think one side is correct and the other one's not. But just, I mean, all you need to do is, when you talk about following the money, look at the fact that right now there's a massive imbalance between the media rights deals that the SEC and the Big Ten can command versus the ACC and the Big 12. The commissioners of the two biggest conferences, of which Penn State happens to be a member, and yet here I am advocating for kneecapping one of them, both of them, in the name of the good of the sport overall, they have every motivation in the world to try to convince everyone that there is money being left on the table for all involved, which is probably not true, by maintaining a system in which they enjoy massive institutional advantages.
Yes, and It's every man for himself or every conference for themselves. And I know this is a little off topic, but towards that end, you have within a conference, though, the Big Ten, media money gets split among the teams. Yeah, Ohio State is a whole lot different than Purdue is. Okay, a lot more money still coming in to Ohio State. I saw something that was fascinating to me. Billionaire Cody Campbell is pushing for negotiation all of college football. The Big Ten Southeast Conference want to do it by conference. What about doing it by individual school? What if Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Oregon said, you know what? We're tired of supporting Purdue and Maryland and Rutgers. We're going to declare ourselves independent, get our own football contracts. I read that literally the Ohio State-Michigan game rights itself would get them as much money as they currently do annually as part of the Big Ten.
And honestly, that outcome is probably more likely than getting everybody singing from the same hymnal. Again, even though I don't think that would be the best for college football overall.
It certainly would not. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number two. Guess what? You get to sit in for Andy and answer the Ask Andy questions. Today, it's Ask Chris. Stay tuned for that.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Chris. It's quarter number three. You know what time it is. It's time for Not Ask Andy. Today we ask Chris. So you ready for listener questions, Chris?
I can't wait. Let's do it.
All right. Let's start with Walt from Annapolis, Maryland, who says, what new player are you most interested in seeing? Who will be the biggest surprise? Who is being undervalued?
Wow. Okay. Those are some really good questions. Okay. So the player I'm most excited to see, who will be the biggest surprise? And who will be undervalued? All right. Let me start with the player I'm most excited to see. And I think especially with the news of Andrew Rapelier's injury. Now, we are hoping that whatever has his foot in a boot is going to be cleared up by the regular season. But the one thing with Rap, who looked tremendous last season, with I think potential to be one of the top two tight ends in the Big Ten this season if he can stay healthy, is that he has had some injury concerns. So I think just in terms of the promise he had coming in and the importance he could potentially have to the offense if Rapp still struggles with some injury issues, is Ben Bramer, the tight end who came in from Iowa State. This is a player with a proven track record of productivity at his previous school. His measurables make him look like an NFL caliber tight end. He's got that athleticism, and he has pre-existing relationships and familiarity, both with his starting quarterback and his offensive coordinator. So I was intrigued the moment we signed him, and now that it looks like maybe he is going to have to pull duty as tight end one at some point, Ben Bramer is the guy I'm most interested in watching. And I have really enjoyed, since Bill O'Brien, this ongoing renaissance of the tight end position in Penn State's offense. So Ben Bramer is my answer to guy I'm most excited to watch. remind me, the next question was who's going to surprise people?
Yeah, surprises, undervalued. Kind of, you could kind of take it a couple different ways. While you're thinking about it, I'll throw it. I was the same way. I'm absolutely in love with the tight end position at Penn State. And I was so thrilled to hear, hey, Iowa State has a similar tight end tradition. They actually brought a couple tight ends from there. I'll throw in a couple of, I want to see a couple of these safeties that they're bringing in, like Marcus Neal.
Marcus Neal, and, sure.
Yeah. You know, I think those are names. They're not the sexy names. I think, you know, Rocco Beck is the obvious one, the running back. But I want to see some of these defensive players. I think safeties, like tight end, it's another one of those positions I love to watch at Penn State, and I hope that tradition will continue.
I'm going to cheat a little bit on who's going to surprise us, because I think someone is going to step up and be a pleasant surprise at the wide receiver spot behind Coby Howard, who I think for sure is going to be the number one guy. But I'm going to give you four different options, two transfers, two returning players, just names to know. On the transfer from Iowa State side, two guys, either one of whom I think could become a fan favorite, are Chase Sowell and Brett Eskelton.
Yes.
Slightly different type of game from those two guys, but both of them bring potential to add a dynamic to the offense that really has been missing on a consistent basis since Parker Washington moved on to the NFL. And that's just the ability to break big plays. In terms of returning players, I think names to know are Lyric Samuel, who just intrigues me because of his frame. One of the biggest bodied receivers on the team. Another true sophomore like Coby Howard. And Peter Gonzalez, who people don't know about because he's been injured, but comes in with NFL pedigree and really I thought always just an under-the-radar talent in terms of his purported readiness out of high school. And he has been healthy now, and he's going to get a full offseason in the program, and he's got a completely new coaching staff, so there's no baggage from where he was before. So out of those four guys, I think someone is going to become a fan favorite this fall.
I think so too, and Pete Gonzalez is one of those names that I've kept an eye on since. I always think those guys injured in high school where they're undervalued because of that.
Yeah.
And I think they have a chance to help out. All right, Chris. This is part of the Ask Andy tradition. This goes all the way back to Ask Ross. We typically get a food question.
I figured this is going to be a food question, yes.
This is Steve from Columbia, one of our favorite listeners. Steve says, I hate to cause controversy and get political, but let's discuss the topic that has the entire nation in an uproar and heated, angry division causing protests around the country. Big Arch versus Whopper versus Wendy's Baconator or Five Guys or any other fast food burger.
Okay, so I have not sampled the Big Arch. I did not take a small tentative bite out of it like the CEO of McDonald's did. But what I am just going to say is I'll make two comments. When you got a sandwich called the Baconator, it's tough for any challengers. I think right out of the gate, Wendy's is absolutely underappreciated and undervalued as a rock solid fast food chain. That said, Five Guys is the better burger and the best of those four. Nevertheless, I'll use the word insulting price increases at Five Guys are just outrageous. I know everything is more expensive than before, but guys, I can go to the field, okay? Which, as much as I love Five Guys, field with way better burger, way better fries, better experience, and spend about the same as I do when I walk into Five Guys, and I might get my food faster. So they're out. They're disqualified. Therefore, Baconator takes a crown.
Very good answer, and I love the fact that you are fitting right in with the tradition of our show. You throw bacon into the conversation, and that's all you really got
to
do.
RIP to the great College Ave Austrian restaurant, Herwig's Austrian Bistro, whose motto, which I believe in wholeheartedly, was bacon is an herb.
Well, I concur. Throw bacon on anything. One of these days, remind me, Chris, I'll have to make for you. I make wings that include bacon over, cooking bacon over the top of them.
Love it.
Along with cheese, anyway. And people wonder why I once had a heart attack. All right, let's move on. Let's go with, let's go with Scott in Lebanon. I listened to your show earlier this week where you talked about Penn State basketball. How is it we can't even field a competitive team in the Big Ten? If schools like Nebraska, Iowa, and Wisconsin can do it, surely we can too, right?
Well, if you want a good solid 20 minutes on this to further elaborate on my answer, go check out the Tengwall Film Network on YouTube. I've got a video up there with Dave Jones, retired columnist from the Patriot News and PennLive.com. And Dave has a lot to say about it along with me, and it's a good conversation. The short version of that discussion is that Penn State, almost unique in the Big Ten and relatively unusual across the whole country, happens to be a school with a lot of tradition overall and a lot of resources, but a limited amount of historical and cultural interest and support for the sport of basketball to begin with. And then also two winter sports in wrestling and men's ice hockey that just suck up a lot of the oxygen in the room. And when it comes to the substantial yet nevertheless finite resources of dollars and institutional support for sports at the university, football rules the roost. And just in a way that you don't see anywhere else, wrestling and hockey draw interest, eyeballs, and pull their weight more than they do almost anywhere else. Penn State's one of only two schools in the conference to go along with Minnesota, where men's basketball is not the number two ticket revenue generator behind football. At both Minnesota and Penn State, it's men's ice hockey. And at Penn State, wrestling generates almost as much ticket revenue as basketball. So going back to what we spent the first two segments on in college sports, you got to spend money to succeed. And the dollars and cents of it just don't make sense, if pardon the pun, for Pat Kraft to go out and make the big investment in men's basketball. But anyway, check out my conversation with Dave. It gets into a lot more depth.
Definitely worth it. All right, let's sneak another one in. Eddie from Vineland, New Jersey says, Andy, how concerned should we be that James Franklin is going to kick our butts in our region in recruiting?
I think modestly concerned. It's going to be a story to follow. James knows a lot of coaches in our footprint. He knows the area very well. He's clearly a talented recruiter, and he's obviously a very petty person who would love nothing more than to stick it up Pat Kraft's butt by having a lot of success and beating Penn State head-to-head for recruits. Although, as I've said on here before, Jim, we've seen what Penn State at close to full strength and Virginia Tech at close to full strength going head-to-head in the same recruiting footprint looks like. It was Frank Beamer versus Joe Paterno from the late 90s to the end of Joe's career. And it looked like what it is, a talent-rich recruiting area in which Penn State won some battles, Virginia Tech won others, and both schools did just fine. So that's why I say it's a concern, but in my opinion, a moderate one.
Well, I think that in that area, it will hurt some. And sure, as you put it, James Franklin's petty. He wants to see the headline, Penn State versus Virginia Tech to get this recruit, and he wants to win that. I think James Franklin will overpay to get a recruit to say he beat Penn State at them.
Great. Again, that's why fueling yourself on resentment long-term is a losing strategy. So if James wants to take that route, I'm not going to complain. And going back to NIL, Penn State will be able to recruit nationally in a way that historically we have not been.
And I think that will be the case. I think these coaches coming in from the Midwest, they have, and from the West Coast, they have connections that this team never did before. All right. Great job, Chris, with Ask Andy. We've got one more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim. He's Chris. After our detour to Ask Chris, we're going to get back to our major topic, which we were talking about this roundtable that occurred last week, set up by the president. And it leads to the big question about federal intervention. And I'll go back to one of my original statements, Chris, is I feel like every quote I saw from this roundtable just confirmed that people were there for themselves. They were answering questions when the question wasn't even put out there yet, meaning what is the actual problem? So I had mentioned, the Texas Tech billionaire Cody Campbell. His thing is he wants to have a national TV contract, which would benefit his school and their conference. There was a woman by the name of Sarah Hirschland who was there. She's a CEO of the U.S. Olympic Committee. Her conversation was about, we can't harm the Olympic sports. Nobody else brought that up because nobody else was concerned about it.
I am very concerned about what's going to happen to the Olympic sports long term in this situation. But I always crack up when the USOC comes in and starts talking about, we can't harm this feeder system we enjoy free of charge, preparing our athletes. It's like, hey guys, if you would like to see the Olympic sports system in college continue to thrive and continue to support the U.S. Team USA's ability to be competitive in the Olympics, how about you put your money where your mouth is? You know, we've got this question of how is the funding gap going to be solved? Well, maybe U.S. Olympic Committee could step in and have some creative solutions beyond, I hope you guys figure out a way to continue providing this to us for free.
Exactly. And I use that as the example that, when you ask the question about what's wrong with college sports, I think for the majority of fans, that's like fifth, sixth on their priority list because they're more concerned about football and basketball and those sports as opposed. So that's what I meant by everyone there has their own agenda. Now, the other question you mentioned early on about the transfer portal, and I think ultimately it's not good for the players to change schools five times in their academic career. They probably end up without a degree or a worthless degree. The other part of the equation where there's some issues that everyone complains about is the money that's going to the players and how different it is if you're Ohio State and Penn State versus, say, Purdue or Wake Forest or someone like that. The question becomes, though, how do you make that more fair? The House settlement now says schools could compensate players directly. You have about $20, $21 million to spend. We know the majority of that goes to football. But what we're seeing, Chris, is this NIL money, which becomes the differentiator. There are football rosters that have, $40 million budget. So that needs to be fixed. How do you fix that? How do you get past the court system I'm going to restrict how much money you, a college football player, can make. If someone's offering you, you know, $8 million to play, why shouldn't you get that money?
Absolutely. There are two issues at hand here. And again, this is where it gets complicated real fast. Clearly, as they did bring up, I think correctly, in that panel discussion, this is pay to play.
Yes.
These guys are being paid a salary. This is not like, hey, can you please come out to the local Dairy Queen and sign autographs, all of which are worth $350,000 a pop, right? It just insults your intelligence to suggest this is like any kind of actual market value exchange for their name, image, and likeness. This is, you are a great, talented college football player. We have access to a bunch of people with stupid money, and they would like to spend their stupid money on you. Here's $3, $4, $8, $10 million. The problem is it's not a salary. It's not, because they're not employees. And so you can't cap somebody's earnings. You can't cap what people are paid to do work. And this isn't even people getting paid to do work. As I talk about creating a unique category for college football and college football players, it's already a unique category because of the difference between what it is to go out in the workforce and have a job and what it was up until about 6-7 years ago for you to be a scholarship athlete in a massively revenue generating sport like college football. The whole thing is crazy. If you tried to explain it to a Martian who landed in a UFO, they'd never understand it.
Well, Chris, here's what I thought would be the basis for a solution. Multi-year contracts, okay? Incoming freshmen.
Yeah.
What people hate now, it's lost money. I pay that freshman a lot of money, come here as a freshman, learn with the hope they'll get on the field year two, and they just run off and go play for somebody else for a couple extra dollars. If there's a multi-year contract, say with a buyout. So if you far exceed your contract in performance, I could go elsewhere and make enough money to pay my buyout. Just like coaches. Coaches sign an 8-year contract, but there's a buyout. It's agreed upon. If James Franklin had chosen to leave Penn State, he would have owed a certain amount of money to Penn State for the right to leave. Why not do the same thing with players? Mm-hmm. I thought, Chris, that it's a brilliant, simple solution. Here was my Exhibit A. Brendan Sorsby, the quarterback at Cincinnati, transfers to Texas Tech, where he's going to make a whole lot more money than he did at Cincinnati. He had a multi-year contract at Cincinnati with $1 million buyout. Texas Tech was going to pay him, say, $5 million. Great. There's my $1 million back to Cincinnati. And I make much more money at Texas Tech. One flaw in my solution there. Sorsby's refusing to pay the $1 million buyout.
Right, right. And the same thing is happening with Duke and Miami right now.
Yes.
And so, yes, smart buyouts 100% need to be in there. You need to have some sort of real life regulator on the market, because otherwise there will be, for a limited amount of time, and this is where you come into the conversation about sustainability, people with stupid money. There will be millionaire donors who are willing to be like, you know, like Homer Simpson in hell with the donut eating machine. They will just keep feeding millions of dollars into the system. But unlike that analogy, eventually you'll run out of donuts. You will run out of dumb millionaires, because they'll either look at it and say, like, this is, I'm getting no return on this. This is ludicrous. I'm not giving you another $10 million next year. Or, whatever, these people just, literally, they'll just run out of money. The supply of money, not that they'll be broke, but the amount of their fortunes that they are willing to donate back to their alma mater with no tax write-off or anything, so that you can maybe field a playoff team and pay a bunch of players who will go make millions of dollars elsewhere at the next school next year. It's going to dry up.
Well, I think there's actually starting to be some leveling out of the salary structure. I'll put it that way. This is the first year, Chris, that I've actually seen articles published that says, here's the price range for a defensive end.
Yeah.
Here's the price range for a running back. And yes, it continually goes up. You know, I thought with Sorsby going to Texas Tech, it was fascinating to me where I read, well, the top quarterbacks, a first level quarterback, you're going to pay up to around $4 million for it. And ironically, it was reported he was going to make $5 million at Texas Tech. And I said, here's the math. He gets the $4 million. The extra million was for someone said, hey, here's the $1 million, kid, to pay your buyout in Cincinnati. And what I liked about that was Cincinnati can't play in that $5 million ballpark for a quarterback. Hey, but they could take that extra $1 million of the buyout and go get themselves several offensive linemen. So there's at least some balance to it. Cincinnati gets compensated for developing this guy. So that's why I thought it was this good solution. I spent all this time patting myself on the back for having this solution, Chris. And like I said, the first best example I see of it, it's going to court because they refuse to pay it. And, you know, basing this on the NCAA and the school's track record in court, who are you betting on, the player or the school?
Oh, the players are going to keep winning these disputes because the structure is so loosey-goosey. It goes back to what we talked about earlier in the hour, Jim, about how you have different conferences with different agendas, different interests, all trying to, you know, coexist and cooperate when it makes sense, but not all the time. There's no league office. There's no NFL commissioner. And the NCAA is woefully, woefully under-equipped to serve that function. We'd be better off with nothing than what we have with the NCAA, which is just like a complete joke.
And once more, just circling back to the very first question, should the government be involved? I'm typically of the feeling, Chris, less government is typically always better than more government. But when you get a problem or an issue where you can't manage your own house, which is where you are with college sports, it wouldn't be a bad thing. Give you a half minute to wrap it up.
Yeah, I think Shannon Terry of On3 is correct that you're right, Jim, but there's a step we need to get to before we reach that point, and that's that the commissioners of the four power conferences have got to achieve détente. They're not going to get everything they want, none of them, but they got to get to a point where they have enough consensus where they're at peace and can present a united front to Congress.
Very good. All right. That's the final word, Chris. Thank you so much. Great contribution to the show. Always love having you on, Chris. So thank you. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.